What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift, to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show.
We have a very special guest in studio today. He is a professional MMA fighter with a record of 6-1. The great and powerful, sweet baby Ray Hayes. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, sir.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Well, you know, first, just to kind of start us off, you want to tell the people out there that don't know you a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm like you guys said, I'm a 6-1 professional fighter. I still have a day job. I work at 8 to 5 as a mechanic at a dealership in Marshfield. So I'm turning wrenches all day. I just recently got out of real estate. I was invested in real estate, so I'm kind of still lingering around and investing in stuff. Got a little brother that fights with me, and we train in the basement of a church.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Not a lot of MMA gyms out where you're at.
I'm kind of like in the middle. I'm in like in between Rolla and Springfield.
Yeah.
So it's either I drive to Springfield or I drive to Rolla, and I met Colton at Parabellum. They're like right in between the right in Waynesville.
Okay.
And then we split off from Parabellum and got our own place, and we just matted the basement out of a church. So
okay.
Oh, that's cool. So is that the Smith Pit? Is that what?
Yeah. We branched off from the Smith Pit because when he branched off from Parabellum, he was kind of looking for a name and like what we were going to call ourselves. And Colton trained under Pat Smith his whole career. So he kind of just hit up Pat and he's like, hey, do you care if we just continue your lineage? And Pat was more than welcome to, you know, have us there because I've been training under Pat too. Colton introduced me to him. So kind of just carrying out the name, really.
Cool. So what originally got you into fighting?
I think it was just being like super unathletic, but still being competitive. Like I tried in high school to play football and baseball, and I could like catch on skill wise, but my athleticism wasn't there and I didn't work that hard. I didn't have a great work ethic in high school. And it wasn't until like I graduated really and I started fighting, like training to fight, you know, that's kind of when I like built a work ethic and really like got athletic.
So like right after high school, you just kind of got into it. Is that when you met Colton or?
Yeah. Right after high school. Like I fought a street fight a bunch in high school. I was kind of a jackass.
Yeah.
You know, so I was always,
always fighting people after school and
stuff. Yeah. That was me. Yeah. So I was pretty much an asshole. But, after that, you know, I wanted to try to compete with it, you know, cause it was getting me in so much trouble. So I was like, I'll try to find an outlet with it and walked into the boxing gym at Colton. Just continued from there. Yeah.
So did you start off boxing?
Yeah. I started during COVID. Like I started training like a year or two before COVID happened. And, so right when COVID happened, I started boxing. So we did like smoker matches cause USA wasn't sanctioning anything. So I had three of those. unsanctioned before I even began MMA. Did those were pretty easy. Like I went to the gyms in St. Louis and knocked guys out, and then started doing MMA right after, right when COVID like lifted.
Okay. So were you training grappling and everything, but like to before, or are you just kind of only training boxing to start off?
Yeah. For about, I'd say probably a good year, I didn't grapple at all. Colton tried getting me to grapple, and like, he would like introduce me to the MMA class, and I would hang around a little too long and see him coming in, and I was like, I gotta go. You know, I ain't sticking around for this.
Yeah, I'm like hugging those guys.
Yeah.
Well, dude, your jiu-jitsu is fucking nasty. Like, your front headlock is dead. Dude, I was watched, like I said before the show, I watched a bunch of your fights today, and I mean, the amount of darces and guillotine finishes you have are phenomenal. Like, it's amazing, especially. Yeah. I mean, I got to bring it up. I mean, that the Trey Martin fight where you give the commentators an envelope and, you know, call out how you're going to submit him. I mean, the submission was beautiful, but like just the way you transition from rear mount to the anaconda choke was fucking, I don't know if I've ever seen it before. Like, it was really cool. Like, I've never, like, the way you brought your arm through and then just like kind of sat to the side. Oh, it's fucking nasty.
Yeah. So I've never actually, that was my first time ever actually hitting it from the back mount.
Really? That wasn't something you ever drilled?
That was not something I trained.
You just fucking saw it?
Yeah, it was just in the moment. So I do remember being in the in the corner, because we were going to take him down, and that was the plan, you know, submit him with the front headlock. But I knew that the skill difference between us, that I could get to the front headlock. However, he didn't have to shoot on me. I didn't have to snap him down. Like, I could take this dude down and find it. That was the game plan. So I didn't expect to take his back. You know, when I got in the mount, I didn't want him to turn over. And then I started kind of losing back mount, and I'm right in front of my black belt coach, you know?
So yeah.
he's like, he remembered the note, and he was having a panic attack in the back. Like, come on,
let's get out of here.
Let's not lose trying to just hit one move. This is an MMA fight. We can't be doing that. You're 1-0 pro.
Right. We can tell him not to open the envelope.
Yeah. they don't have to do that. And my other coach, Colton, he was all about it. You know, he was like, no, we're going to do this, you know? So I had two different kind of corners. One guy was pushing it and like, we're going to do this. And the other one was like, let's not fuck this up. We're going to look stupid.
Let's just win. We're a pro now. Like, let's take it a little bit serious.
But, and I remember like I slipped my hand under his neck for a second, and I was like, I could hit the rear naked right now. And Colton was kind of yelling at me to like transition. And I was like, how am I going to get from back to, you know, a front headlock? So in my head, I was going to just stand up and get off him. But Dave Frizzell started walking me through, you know, and I kind of fell off to the side. Like, you see him kind of hip off.
Mm-hmm.
So I've fallen off to the side, and then Dave walking me through, like, just to wrap the arm around and stuff. So yeah, it was really just listening to him.
Yeah. So like, what made you want to predict, like, give them the envelope and kind of do the whole Gordon Ryan thing?
Yeah. So Trey actually fought Billy the Kid, and I started training with Billy real good. And Trey's just kind of one of those guys that, like, he just shows up and he fights, you know, and he does a little bit of talking. He's, you know, likes to make the fight happen, you know? So he was doing a little bit of talking and leading up to it. And I was just like, I know I'm way better than this dude, and I could either go out there and just put on a performance and really hurt him, or to me, the worst way to go out would be super embarrassed.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like, if you come in and tell me you're going to beat me at something, I'll die before you beat me. That, you know, like, you're not going to,
you might beat me another
unless
way.
Unless the skill gap is that big, you're not going to do that. You know? So I think to me and Colton, that was the biggest thing to like, we're 1-0 pro. What do we got to lose? The skill gap's that big. Let's go make a statement and really get people looking at me super early. And I think that's what that did, you know? Dude.
Yeah. And I feel like that kind of made a name for you.
Yeah.
And after that, I mean, you've headlined quite a few cards, right?
Yeah. Ever since then, I've main evented.
That's awesome.
That's sick. Dude, that was a fucking good move.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, right after that, I fought Brian Sekiel for Nemesis. I co-main evented to Dakota Bush.
Yeah. Okay.
But you ain't main eventing over Bush. So,
yeah.
But ever since then, after that, yeah, I've been co-main main event every time. Yeah.
Dude, fucking awesome. I mean, because you haven't, you know, so when did you actually start grappling? Like 2020, 21?
Yeah. So
you haven't been in the world of grappling. Like, you haven't been doing it that long.
I've only had one jiu-jitsu tournament.
So. Oh yeah. That was going to be my next question. Yeah,
so what belt are you?
Yeah. Purple belt.
Golden. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So do you ever train in the gi?
I have a handful of times just cause.
I mean, you're an MMA fighter. It doesn't make a ton of sense. I'm always curious if fighters train in the gi.
Some people like complain about it. I really do think it does translate a lot for, you know, MMA grappling. Obviously I haven't done it a whole bunch, but I also think, like, I'm a purple belt in MMA jiu-jitsu. If you put me, like, in the jiu-jitsu tournaments, I'm hanging with purple belts, but I really like, to me, if I was going to compete jujitsu, I would really wish I was still a blue belt, you know,
sure,
those matches would be a lot easier. So I would have, I definitely like, I'm not in no rush to be belted or anything like that, but MMA jujitsu. Yeah. Like you said, my front headlock game, I've submitted some high level belts with just that move. Get submitted by him with a whole bunch of other shit and can't hit nothing else. But my front headlock game and my MMA jujitsu, I'm pretty solid that I can roll with anyone as long as I can punch you too.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's like, you know, I mean, I'm just strictly a jujitsu guy. You know, I've done a lot of competitions and stuff, but like there's plenty of times where I'm in a position where like, oh, if this dude wanted to crack me right now, I mean, I, you know, in a fight, this doesn't make sense, you know, but like jujitsu, it works, you know. Yeah.
Guys want to be choked a lot more when they're being punched in the face.
For sure. Yeah. And you can
choke me or punch me.
It can, you know, strikes can obviously open up a ton of submissions, you know, which is like, you know, that's a huge part of MMA and finding the submission.
And I think that's like you complimenting my jujitsu. I don't see it as like the best part of my game, but I really think it shines because of my ability to do that, you know, to make them happen. And Colton's trained me to be a finisher this whole time. I'm not to lay and pray or to hold position or win points. You know, if I'm going to punch you until you give me a submission, and I'm going to reach and search for those. I'm not just going to take the grappling way, you know, lay on you and kind of hold position.
Yeah. I mean, all your fights have been extremely exciting. I mean, I think there's only one that's gone to decision, if I'm not mistaken. All your pros fights, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I haven't.
Oh, they're all finishes
as a pro. I went to decision twice as an amateur and then once in kickboxing.
Okay. Now, how many kickboxing fights?
Just one.
Just one?
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the worst fight I've been in, bro. Like,
really?
My only concussion, that was, I was just talking to Jamie because I fought one of his guys out of the church, Calvin Williams. That was a crazy fight.
Really? What happened?
I was just, it was just like pace for 3-4. It's kind of weird. You think like MMA fights, they're 3 minutes as an Amy. But then you get 2 minutes as a kickboxing. So like going into that, I was like 2 minutes.
But it's like a fucking sprint.
But yeah, it is a sprint. And especially if you fight a dude from the church, you're not, like I told Jamie, you got to learn how to breathe underwater. Those guys will not let you breathe. He won't back off. So that was the biggest thing. Like Calvin was in my face that entire time. Didn't get a second to breathe. So yeah, that fight was crazy. Even like looking back at it, I'm like, that sucked. But yeah.
So your story has layers, many layers: fighter, mechanic, real estate investor, orphaned at a young age. What part of your identity do you think people misunderstand the most?
I think a lot of it, probably the fighter aspect, you know, because people build conclusions in their head about MMA fighters, you know, like you got to be the biggest, the toughest dude in the room. And I'm not that, you know, I'm the quietest, you know, least likely to open up. So,
and I think people that are in the fighting world would understand that, but it's just the people that are outside the fighting world that don't really
like
get that.
At my day job, like, you know, I told them right at the bat that I fought so I could get like time off to, you know, go train and go fight. So there wasn't no, like miscommunication there. But, even my coworkers, like when they found out, they were like,
"You,
this dude fights, you know," they go on YouTube me and be like, Oh, okay. He does fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. This quiet, slender, tall guy. Like he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. You met me in high school. You think I was a dickhead.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Damn.
For sure.
Damn. Well, so you're, you train with your brother as well. What's that dynamic like? Are you guys like, kind of, is there like a rivalry there? Or is it just like straight up support?
Yeah. I think it's chilled out. Cause like, Before we even knew how to fight, you know, like wrestling with your brother.
That's a different thing.
That would get intense, you know, we would go at it. Now, like we'll be home or like at family events and we'll like start playing around and it's like, we'll either like not do it because we both know that at any second someone could do it, or we'll like, there'll be times where we're wrestling and we'll throw every bit of knowledge about MMA away. And it'll be like, just back to the old
back
days.
Back to the old days in the living room. Move the couches. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, it'll be just like that. We'll look stupid. But yeah, training with your family's great, man. Like having Austin there. Anytime I need to train, someone to hold pads, talk to you about anything. And then like, even like with fights, you know, in corners, luckily I haven't been to the, you know, second round or to the stool much, but just having him there, like backstage, Austin's cornered me probably 8 or 9 times, and each time he's been in my corner was a first round finish. So like, just
good luck charm.
Yeah, just the connection and the mindset that I have, you know, walking out backstage with Austin, having him there the whole night. That's, yeah, I can't get that with nobody else. So.
Sure, sure. And you're the older brother, right? Yeah. How much older?
2 years.
Oh, so yeah, you guys are, I mean, growing up, you're now probably same size. You guys are training partners.
Like, yeah, he's actually a little bigger than me.
So you typically fight at 45, but mm-hmm. You fought a few times at 55, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, is what weight class is he?
He should be fighting at 55. He's fighting at 70 on this next fight at the lake. So I mean, he's right around. He's walking around like 85 or something. So he's big, yeah,
big boy.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you walk around at?
Like 70.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So how's that cut to 45 for you? Is that?
It's getting harder. Getting harder as it goes.
Do you think you'll eventually transition to 55?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm 23, so. Just in this last like year, I can see how my body's changed. So by the time I'm 25, 26, I know 55 is probably going to be.
Yeah, because you're still growing, dude. Yeah. You're young, man. Like, you know, I'm in my early 30s and I feel like I'm finally, okay, I'm like not growing anymore, yeah, you know? Yeah. And you fight pretty fucking often. Mm-hmm. Like how many times have you fought in the last year?
I fought 6 times last year. Yeah. Oh, wow. So all my first, like in a calendar year, I didn't fight in the year, but it was October of 23 was my professional debut. And then by the time of October 24, I had the 6, you know, lined up. So
damn.
When's the next one?
May 2nd. So okay. 4 weeks.
And where's that one at?
Kansas City.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So you come up here pretty regularly to train, no?
Yeah. I think I'm one of the few guys that goes around about every room in Missouri. You know, I don't travel up to KC much and train in those rooms just because I feel like every other fight I'm fighting a Kansas City guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I definitely make the trip up to St. Louis. I'll go to Wolf Den, St. Charles. You know, all these gyms are super open to me. I come in all the time and train with all these guys. So
yeah, I mean, everybody's looking for a new body, a new look, a new, you know, and that's awesome that you bring that to the table. And you know, it's always, I just love that you wouldn't think that in like the MMA community that it would be so like, as an outsider, you wouldn't think it would be so welcoming to like bring other people in, but it really is,
yeah.
You know, which is just awesome.
Yeah.
So you lost both your parents at a young age, you know, and then grinded through MMA. Does that fuel you or what's that dynamic like?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone always asks my why and it's them, you know, like I said, I'll never get the chance to sit down and talk to them and know that I've made them proud. So my life, you know, whether that be in real estate, fighting, you know, fighting is what I put most of my time to, but it's to make them proud. So at the end of the day, I'll never know if it's done. You know, I get home from training, don't know if it's done. I win the FAC title, don't know if it's done. So until my time's up, I'm gonna keep trying until it's up, you know, and I can hear that. That's all I'm doing. But so and I think that sets me apart because a lot of dudes, they do it for money. They do it for their family, their daughter, their, you know, whoever they do, but they still got them. So like at the end of the day, when you go home and you're laying with them and they say, oh, I'm proud of you. Or, you know, that takes a little bit of stress off. You know, you're doing the right things.
Yeah.
I get home. I don't know if I did it right, if I'm doing it good, you know? So it's just constant feel, constant burning. You know, I'm never going to get burnt out on it or tired because to me, it's not done until I'm done. You know,
sure.
I got to not be here for it to be done. So.
And how old were you when that happened?
I was 15.
Oh, damn. 15.
So you're 15. Yeah, so you're really Austin was 13.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did it happen?
Car crash. Our, winter of 16. Yeah, December 16th.
Man.
It's awful.
Yeah, yeah.
So from there, did you guys live with another family member or?
So we lived on the same property as my grandma. We just lived in a different house.
Okay.
So whenever it happened, we just moved in with her. And live with her and finish school out and stuff. But and then, like, when I turned 18, I moved back into my parents' house because insurance paid for it and stuff. So I've been still on the same property, still taking, now I'm taking care of grandma. It's reversed, you know. Mm-hmm. She took care of me all these years, so I'm taking care of her.
Cool. So cool.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a mechanic's hands, but a fighter's soul. how much of the blue-collar work ethic bleeds into your fighting?
I'd say a lot just cause that's all I've been doing. You know, ever since I got out of high school, I've been a mechanic and then I went into construction a little bit here and there and back to turning wrenches. So I really think just that mindset, you know, like there's a lot of people say you don't know hard work until you go do, you know, construction or this blue collar work, you know, and that's a true thing. You know, I don't think I've just as hard as I've worked in the gym. I don't think I've worked any near as hard doing roofing. You know, that's way harder to me than training. I would much rather spend a day blowing my arms out on the bench press than being on top of a roof. So the guys that can do both, those are different dudes. You know, I don't know if you've, you know, especially jujitsu, you get to grapple with all kinds of people. If you go grapple with a dude that just spent, you know, 8 hours on a roof, that dude grab a hold of you a little different than the nurse.
Oh, 100%. I was training with my buddy this morning. He's a mechanic, and he's got the, I mean, like trying to break his grip off of my grip. Like, he's one of those guys that once he grabs your gi, and we were training gi this morning, it's like, I mean, good. It's there until he doesn't want it to be there. Like, his hands are like glue. Like, there's no breaking his grip.
Yeah, I've training with, like, you get the guys that like lift weights and that are big and bulky, and then you get the guys that just work hard. And the guys that do both, you get guys that go to the gym that lift and they have a hog. Those are a handful to deal with.
Yeah. Well, nothing like those. You know, it's so funny because you're so right. The like bulky bodybuilder like strength doesn't necessarily translate to grappling, and it's like you think it would. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think it helps a little. Like, for it's sure. better than not having it, but. I think that like farmer strength, that like man strength or whatever you want to call it, like that some people just like have, mm-hmm. like whether it was, you know, like God given or it was from years of, you know, work, like is a different kind of strength and you feel it. Like Absolutely. Some guys just feel like they're fucking made of metal.
Yeah.
You know, sure, and it's just, it's crazy, man. Uh-huh.
I mean, I guess that redefines the level of toughness, you know. Yeah. It's like, so how has that evolved over time for you? Like, what your thoughts on how, like, what toughness is?
I don't think I've struggled with being tough. I think it goes back again to, you know, losing my parents at 15. I had to get tough. I had to grow up fast. But I feel like I've always been kind of a tough guy. But I mean, I think mentally tough is really just the way to go. You know, all of our bodies can probably handle around the same stuff. You know, we're going to break around the same point, but it's whenever your head or mind breaks, that's the big part. So, and that's where I break more guys. You know, I'll break a lot of guys that are physically better than me just mentally, you know? So I feel like being mentally strong is the key to it all. And I feel like I've excelled in that just because of the way life's dealt with me. You know, I haven't really had to work for it. It was kind of pushed on me.
I was gonna say, does it have to go back to like everything that you've been through that's kind of helped you evolve and understand your mental toughness?
Yeah, I think so. I think so for sure. You know, and just wanting it. You know, some guys don't want it to the level that some people do, and if you don't want it that bad, it'll come out. It'll come out eventually when the water gets poured on. You know, you look for places to stop swimming.
Sure. Yeah, man. Well, let's talk about the Smith Pit. You were talking before the show. That's kind of a gym that you and your coach kind of built, mm-hmm. essentially, right? Like, what's the dynamic like there? Is there a lot of other training partners? Are you kind of like the main guy, or how's it go?
Yeah. So even like when Dakota and Jake Collier were training with Pat, you know, we kind of Colton stemming off of that. He really kept the same kind of format and outline. You know, they didn't have, it's not a class, it's not a big gym, they trained in a room maybe a little bit bigger than this, you know, so it's nothing fancy, not a lot of people. It's just a fight team with fighters in it going hard, you know, learning from one guy. So as far as like, we don't go in there and pay, you know, big gym memberships. We don't have all the equipment. We got little gloves, a couple bags in the corner, and you know, concrete walls. So
bodies,
Rocky style.
Yeah. So
that's cool. So you're ranked in a few regions right now. What's your view on like the ranking system? I know you fight at a bunch of different promotions and stuff. Like, what's you know, I guess kind of how does that line up in like the future? Like, do you think like what's obviously? I think I would imagine the goal is eventually to get to the UFC.
Yeah. I think right now I'm in a great position. Like, I don't pay too much attention to Tapology and stuff just because, like, I think I'm, like, top five and the dudes above me are just have a lot of fights, you know? The records aren't the best, but they just got more fights than me and they're older. So, like, realistically, it's a 23-year-old. It's got all finishes better than the, you know, almost 30-year-old with 50 fights.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't pay too much attention to Tapology, but especially with like the Contender Series, I don't know if you guys watch that or pay attention to it,
of course.
But the way it's set up, like, I'm 6-1, all finishes 23.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, man, it's, you're bound to nobody get that call.
Yeah. Hopefully. The FAC title, no one that's won it at featherweight has not gone to the UFC. Everyone that's won it's went to the UFC, so I already won it. I'll be the only guy to defend it, you know, come May. I'm fighting a dude that's never been finished. So I think I finish him, knock that off. You know, that's a record in its own, finishing guy that's never been finished. Adding a title defense that's never been done right before the summer starts, 23-6-1. I don't know what more I got to do, you know?
Right.
But again, I'm 23. I'm not pushing it. What's two more years waiting on the outside, you know? What
am it's two more years of you getting better. Yeah. Right? You know, I mean, think of how much, you know, you've really only been doing this for, you know, 5 years, four and some change, you know?
I've only been pro since 23, so.
Yeah, so it's like, dude, you know, you're still so young. You've got so much ahead of you. And, like, you know, even if you didn't get the call for 2 years, you know, think of how much better you'd get in 2 years, you know? Absolutely. And how many more fights, how many more experiences, like.
Yeah, something you definitely don't want to rush.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. I'm not. Everyone always asks me when or why or how. What's the perfect? I don't care, man. I know it's going to happen. Like I said, I'm so young. Like, two more years, what am I going to be?
Yeah.
Maybe I lose a couple more times, but I'm going to win 7 or 8 more times. So, hindsight, I'm, 10-3? Oh.
Yeah, it's still a great run.
You know,
this isn't boxing, So, I mean, it's pretty rare that you go undefeated in MMA.
Exactly.
Like, it happens, but it's rare. Yeah. You know?
Well, that's the thing we say on a show all the time. Like, if you try, like, the thief of joy is comparison. So, like, if you're going to sit here and try and compare yourself to someone else that might have gotten bumped up already or sooner, it's just like, that's just going to destroy you and piss you off. Let that shit go and fucking do your own thing.
Yeah, I see a lot of guys on the Contender Series that, like, you kind of question after you watch him fight. You're like, if he should be getting shots over, you know, I know a lot of guys that are good that he shouldn't be getting shots over, but I think there's a lot that plays into it, you know, like how many followers you got, how big of a name you are, what gym you come out of, who's your manager. You know, I train out of a church basement. My coach manages me.
Yeah.
I got 1,000 followers on Instagram. So, yeah. So, you know, I'm not tripping about none of that.
Is that stuff too, as fighters, that you guys talk about? Like, how do we build up a bigger support system or following to kind of get that aspect?
Yeah. Some people are more into it than others, you know, like I've just now like started kind of producing content. You know, I used to never post on anything. So this last like year turning pro, I've really been trying to crank out more and focus into that. But I know guys that whoop my fucking ass all the time and they don't post for a year, you know,
right.
And they're way better than me. So I think to each their own, you know, it's kind of whatever way you want to do it. I know today's age, we know which way is easier to get there. You know, you gotta be marketable. You gotta be in everyone's face all the time. So it's kind of whatever you want to do. You want the easier road or load rest traveled?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, are there some guys that like that are in the UFC and thing like that? Like, that you are big fans of. I mean, like we love watching Sugar Shane. Like, that's our guy that we love to watch.
Yeah.
Do you got anybody like that in the UFC that you're like a fan of, or like you try and model yourself after?
Yeah. I mean, I've always loved like Charles Oliveira, you know, this, especially the last little run he's been on. He's incredible. You know,
definitely got a similar style to him.
Yeah. I was going to say watching that fight where you gave the envelope and all that, I was like, man, this kind of reminds me of like,
Oliveira.
I was like, this is the Oliveira Mike Chandler fight at this level. Cause that's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
And like with the way he was built versus the way you're built. Like, I'm like, man, this is a lot, your level of Chandler versus Oliveira.
Yeah. That's
pretty cool.
For sure. Yeah. I do a lot, like, now that I'm getting closer and closer to, like, being there, I do a lot more watching guys that are in my weight class, built like me, and more learning than I am, like, setting back, you know.
Enjoying,
you know, and it's kind of crazy because I've been a fight fan the whole time, so I've always, like, I'll watch every fight, you know, I'm a big bettor, so I'm betting on all the fights, too.
Yeah, I've noticed that on your social media. You like to gamble.
For sure. But now it's got, like, even when I'm not in a fight camp or something, I'll be sitting down watching, like, I'll watch the past fights, just learning versus enjoying it, you know. I'll catch myself like writing stuff down about it and bringing it back to the gym and using it. So
you watch a lot of tape just to kind of study.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it makes sense. I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
An easy way to get better, that's not, you know, beating your body up.
Yeah, it's a
mental reps.
Especially like being a mechanic, I'm like one of the youngest guys in the shop. You know, you got all the experience, you know, master techs in the corner. If I want to learn to do something or get to know to do something over there and I watch them or I ask them, I'd be stupid not to watch UFC or ask way better people.
100%. You're as good as the people you surround yourself with.
Absolutely.
Sure, yeah. You know? So,
Well, as someone that's climbing both the financial and professional ranks, what does freedom mean to you now versus when you started fighting?
Right. To me now, it's just like, if I can just train and just fight, because there's guys out there that I'm going to be competing with. Like, I just fought David Evans. David's got acting. He's got a business. He's, you know, like the week before he fought, he traveled to New York and trained in New York and stuff. And I was like, this dude doesn't have, he's literally just got to train for me. That's all he's got to worry about, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm over here getting off at 5 o'clock, yeah, driving 40 minutes, getting in, training 2 hours, you know, trying to barely make it. So I really think the moment I can get to that, where all I got to do is wake up, hit this training session, go eat, sleep, hit this training session. When that happens, that'll be freedom to me, just because I'm not going to be able to compete like this with guys like that forever. You know,
yeah.
Come to an end one day where those guys are working twice as hard and I'm not able to keep up. So getting there, that'd be freedom to me, getting to that point.
That's something that a lot of people probably at home don't realize, that like a lot of MMA fighters, they've got jobs . Cause it's, you know, especially when you start out at the low level, you know, the early pros, like they're not making a ton of money, you know, like it's not enough to live on, you know? So
that was also a big driving factor, you know, cause I watch I watch all my opponents' fights. I'll be watching your social media, your stories, and I'll watch everything. And like I said, I was watching David go to New York, train here, train there, go over there and do all the, and he was hitting 2 training sessions a day. In my head, I'm like, this dude's doing everything with all these high level athletes. And I'm in the basement of a church. So it was a big driving factor to just work harder, show up more, you know, again, travel, you know, go to Springfield, go to St. Louis, do everything I could to make sure that I was putting in just as much work, if not more, than he was doing.
Yeah. So what's a typical day look like for you in terms of like waking up in the morning till you go to bed at night?
I work at 8. So get to work at 8 to 5, and right from 5, I work in Marshfield and I train in Buckhorn. That's like a 45-50 minute drive. Right when I get off at 5, run over to the church, get in there. We train for an hour and a half most of the time. And then I'm just headed back home, you know, eat, go to sleep. And then Fridays I'll go up to Springfield, Marshfield to Springfield. It's like 25-30 minute drive. Yeah. And I head straight from work and I'll go up there. We'll hard spar. And Saturday, Sunday, kind of depends, you know, on my body, really. Saturday, I normally use the rest day, and then Sunday, I'll hit open mat at one of these places.
Yeah. So how many times are you just training? Are you typically sparring one day a week? You're in camp or more than that?
It kind of just depends. We spar at the church basement. We're going live like every day almost, you know. Okay. Right? I'm obviously not killing each other. Very moderated, very controlled. The good thing about, like, we only have, like, probably 6-7 guys that train out of there. So the good thing about that is whenever one guy has a main event spot 4 weeks, everyone's focused on me. So versus when I go to fight club, I'm fighting everyone and we're all getting ready for fights, you know?
Sure.
Those guys aren't getting ready for fights. They're all fighting southpaw. They're all, you know, giving me the certain looks, doing what Jose does and, you know, getting ready to beat 6 Jose's up that day versus,
yeah,
I got to adapt, you know? I think that's the big thing. The best thing about training there is that's, you know, you go in there, you're in Ray Hayes' fight camp. You know, you're in Austin Hayes' fight camp. You're in Colton Justice's fight camp.
Just whoever's up next.
Yeah. Whoever's up next. If there's more than one, then we'll kind of alternate and we'll all take turns. But that's the big thing, you know. And I think that's the reason that you see a lot of guys venture out to big gyms. Like Dakota, it's helped Dakota a lot, you know. He's an animal over there at ATT. But he's one of many animals.
Right.
You know? And some people that helps, some people it doesn't. I don't know if it helped me or not, because this is going so well, you know, as me being the
guy.
Yeah. So
it's like, you know, I've heard it described by someone else that, you know, you can do a lot of getting better or working hard. And we do a lot of, you know, they do at those big camps, they do a lot more working hard, you know, because it's just, you're it's less focus on like getting better and you're just surrounded by killers all the time. So you're just, you know, trying to rise to the level of your competition. And I mean, it's two different ways to do it, but, yeah, I mean, if it's working for you, what, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know?
That's, and me and Colton's had to talk about like expanding going. I went to JW for a couple of weeks and trained down there in Albuquerque, but, that's basically the conclusion we came to, you know, as long as this thing works, as long as I haven't struggled in very many fights, you know?
Right.
So
I mean,
I'm not even struggling, let alone losing. So until something starts happening, we find big holes that we can't fill, we're riding this, you know, it's working.
Yeah.
Makes complete sense. So you've worn a lot of hats. So champion, underdog, brother, breadwinner, which role challenges you the most personally?
I think the biggest challenge was like right after my parents died, the relationship with my brother. That right there, like the 1-2 years after, it suffered the most, just because as an older brother, you want to, you know, when they were here, I was just his brother. That was cool. I kind of mentored him a little bit, whatever, but he ain't got a father. I had 2 more years of having a father. So it was like, teach this kid, you know, not let him fuck up. He's going to do right, blah, blah, blah. And that kind of pushes apart just because he wanted, I'm not his dad, you know, to him, I'm just my brother. So I think me being his dad, trying to be his dad, really interrupted that. But we worked through it, you know, we made it happen. You know, I think I helped him.
Yeah, you know? He's doing all right.
So, yeah, we figured it out. But and now, you know, we train together. We go all over the place together all the time. We're always, he was going to come today. His little lazy ass slept in.
You know, you guys still live together in the house?
He lives with my, we live on the same property. He lives with my grandma. I still live alone.
At the house?
Okay. Yeah, at the house. But my roommate's actually moving out and he's been talking about moving in. So if we live together, that'd be even more time.
Even more time together. Even more brotherly time. Yeah, that's crazy. So, I mean, I'm sure that dynamic, you know, when your parents passed away, that, you know, you being his father, you know, kind of trying to be his father. Yeah. I can imagine how that could, you know, push him the wrong way or, you know, push him, you know, in the wrong direction or, you know, upset, created a dynamic between the two, I should say.
It took me a while to realize it, you know, like for a few years I was really pushing it, really trying, you know, just cause I didn't know how to react. So I really didn't think he knew how to react, you know?
Well, yeah. It's a very difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah. Finding MMA definitely helped me, you know, take a step back and, you know, built our relationship for sure. I kind of drug him into it too. You know,
oh, really? So you were like, dude, fatherly, you gotta just part, come fucking, like, train with me, man.
He was just as bad as me, if not worse, on the street fighting and stuff.
Oh, really?
So I was like, we gotta, I'm going, you gotta go. We're going.
What's the craziest street fight you've been in that you remember?
Oh, the craziest, probably this, we got in a road rage fight. I've only ever been in two that actually like got all the way to pulled over and fighting.
Two road rage fights?
Or yeah. Okay. Yeah, actually, just two that actually, like, normally they just drive off and it never really, you know, actually happens. One guy was just an older guy. He got out of his car. I punched him once and we just went on our way. But the second one with Austin, we were coming back from one of my family members' funeral. It was like a cousin or something. So we're all dressed nice and dress boots. And we see this car driving like an asshole, dude, just messing with this truck. And we roll up next to this car and I'm looking out the window and we're a couple exits before Marshfield. I live in Lebanon. So we're headed back there and I'm looking through the window and it turns out it's a guy from my high school that I grew up with that I know. And I'm like, I'm looking through the window. And then Austin's texting him. He's like, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, this truck, it's just been on my ass for miles. They're driving like idiots, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, okay, that's weird. You know, and the truck kind of like sped off a little bit. So we ignored it and we make it, you know, a couple more miles, feels like 5-10 minutes. And the truck's like right behind me. I don't know how this happened, but it's right on my ass.
So you're driving.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm like, what's going on? You know? And he comes and tries to pass me. And I'm like, I'm playing the asshole game. You want to drive like an asshole? I'm an asshole.
Speed
today.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. I just came from a funeral. I'm an asshole too. So I kind of like get in front of him and then he ends up like passing me on the shoulder and he's flipping me off, yelling, you know, and I'm like, okay, whatever. And he gets right up beside, like he slows down and gets beside my passenger window. And my brother's in the back seat.
On the shoulder?
Yeah, my brother's in the back seat. So you can't really, he can't tell that I got my brother with me. I roll down my passenger window and he's yelling and he's pointing at the Marshfield sign. He's like, let's pull over. And I was like, okay, say less. You know? Yeah, and I'm at this point, I'm like a year and a half into training. Okay. I'm like, I'm super confident.
Sure. You know,
mm-hmm. Stupid and confident, yeah. But good at fighting.
20 years old. Yeah.
No, not really. So we pull over and immediately, like, I put it in park. I get my shirt off. I'm already out the car. I'm like, as soon as dude steps out, I'm smoking this dude. Truck pulls up. Passenger door opens. I grab the door. I go to hit him. The back door opens. The front door opens. And I'm like, oh.
Fuck.
Yeah. So I take
Austin,
like,
get out here.
I take six steps back and Austin's taking his boots off. He's taking his shirt off. I'm like, Austin, you know,
hurry the fuck up.
Yeah. So it's 2v3 now. And we're squared off in this shopping center parking lot, you know? And I'm like, this ain't good.
No.
You know, I taking a few steps back, get away from everybody. And I hear like tires screeching behind me. So I turn around, like, what the fuck's going on? You know, I'm about to be hit. My buddy in his van has been watching this whole thing this entire time. I didn't know this. He's got four dudes in this van. They come barreling out of this van. So it went from a 3-on-2, me and Austin probably about to get our asses whooped, to a 6-on-3. Yeah, from there on,
it actually happened.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, I look over. Somebody's got some dude's arm behind his back. Austin's punching him. One of my buddies threw dude over his head. He slammed him. I was the only dude in a 1-on-1 fight that entire time. The other guys were just getting
just a fucking brawl.
Yeah. So I'm over here like fighting a dude 1-on-1, and then he pushes me up against this lady's car, and I break her mirror off. And I'm like, oh shit, fuck. You know. And I look around, and there's people now, like crowded up watching us. I'm like, broke this girl's mirror off, and I'm like, oh god. And I look over, and like, they're on the ground just getting stomped out. So I go, Austin, and I just yell like across the parking lot to get some help. And he like looks at me all scared, pushes me and takes off running. And I was like, oh, thank god. I was tired of it. And I, it was the biggest dude out of all of them. He's like 200 pounds, like 150 Ray, you know, trying to fight him. But they ended up like going back to their car. And I seen they had like a deer rifle in the truck and stuff. And I was like, oh shit, well, this is about to get really bad. They get in the truck and they like spin a U-turn. And my buddy is standing right in front of the passenger door of this car and it's opened. And he literally tries hitting him. My buddy jumps over the hood of the car, smashes the door closed, and takes off running.
Fuck.
So I'm like, we're standing there watching this and we're like, what is this? You know, what do we do now? And everyone's watching and calling the cops. So then we're just like, you know, I guess we're going to
wait. The fuck out of here.
No, we waited around for the cops, you know, because we got to like secure this door open or something.
Oh yeah.
His car's ruined, you know? So we just sat around, wait for the cops, and the cops take all of our statements and stuff. And they like go back on they try to get him video surveillance to watch it all. Nothing ever came out of it. I never got in any trouble. I don't know if he got insurance money or what, but that was the craziest thing, just because the ending, you know, he turned around and tried to hit him with it.
Dove over the hood of the car, like Dukes of Hazzard.
Like, we just
style.
About watched a murder over it.
Yeah, over a, yeah. Over a fucking stupid road rage thing.
Yeah,
where this guy was trying
so
to
dumb.
Yeah.
So dumb.
Crazy. Well, thank was God that, your buddy pulled up.
Yeah. Was that the end of the road?
Yeah, yeah. Afterwards, I was like, I'm sorry about your car, but thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you a lot.
Was that the end of the road rage for you?
Yeah, that's the last one. Yeah, that's the last one I got out the car. Now I don't even be getting out the car.
Yeah.
Just keep driving. Buckle up.
Well, now as a professional fighter, can't you get into some trouble for that too if you get into a fight outside of the ring?
See, I've heard that, but I really don't think it's like, it's kind of, play dumb games, you get dumb rewards. You know? Like,
fuck around and find out.
I feel like, you know, I've heard to the extent of like, it depends how far I take it. Like, mm-hmm. Fighting you and I knock you out and then stomp on your head.
Yeah.
You're a professional fighter. Why are you knocking them out and stomping on their head?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. But it's like, well, and it's like, especially as I think that's where jiu-jitsu could really come into handy, you know, because it's like, dude, how many people, you know, you've rolled with people that are untrained. Like, how easily can you just kind of throw them around, throw them in a quick submission? Yeah. You know, like,
I feel like it'd be easier to get in trouble because the more you know, the more they expect from you. Like, mm-hmm. if you know how to handle a situation and obviously handle it, and then you take it that extra step.
Yeah. It's like, if I put this dude in a Kimura and snap his arm behind his back, I don't need to do that. Yeah. I can just be like, all right, exactly. I'm going to let you out of here. We're both going to go our separate ways.
Exactly.
And then we both get in our cars and go. Yeah, dude. You just never know what people know, mm-hmm. you know, that especially in, you know, now it's like how many people, you know, I can think of so many people that I know that you look at them and you would never assume, you would never like, oh, they think that this guy can fight. But like he grabs a hold of you, you're like, holy fuck, this like scrawny nerdy dude is fucking a savage.
Yeah. You know? And it's 25 now, dude. Like The scrawny, nerdy dude's also got a gun.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's got a drum mag.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that because, you know, our buddy Nick, who's Nick's what, a purple belt? Purple?
Nick Baldwin?
No, Kern.
Oh, yeah. Nick's purple belt.
Yeah. So Nick and I, our buddy, we play hockey together. And it was funny when I was like, man, I'm glad he's on my team. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this dude's a purple belt in jujitsu. Like,
yeah, Nick's a coach. He's very fucking good.
And I was like, yeah, man, like this guy, like,
but you look at him and
I was like, he's dangerous. Like, I'm glad he's on our team. Like,
he's like the smiliest, like friendly guy.
But like, he'll also like, he'll stir some shit up on the ice. And like, the guys are just like, man, what is he doing? Picking up messing with the biggest guy on the ice. I'm like, nah, Nick would be fine. Like, I'm worried about that big guy. And they're all like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, dude's a purple belt in jujitsu. Like, he's going to be fine. And he coaches it. So, like, he's really good. Yeah, he's, and I'm like, Nick? No. I'm like, dude's a badass.
Wait till he grabs a hold of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might be a little harder to do on the ice, though. I've never grappled on the ice. And
I can't even roller skate, so I'm not even going to try, bro.
That was funny. I was actually speaking. Do you know Corey Beck?
Yeah.
He just posted something the other day that it was like a, I think it's like one of those kind of gimmick things that they're doing where they're like, it's like supposed to be like a hockey fight, like where you literally like, where it's like literally you go there to hockey fight.
And
Yeah. And that's cool. Like, well, crazy. You know, Corey grew up playing hockey his whole life and he's a pro MMA fighter. Yeah. So he's like, oh, it's right up my alley. You know? Yeah. He's like, yeah, I remember, I think he posted the other day. He's like, should I do it? You know, like with like a poll thing on Instagram. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to see it.
That'd be sick. Yeah. Yeah, dude. Can I sign up for that class? Yeah. Well, I mean, and speaking of Corey, so we had Corey on not too long ago, and what's he called? His name's the scientist.
The scientist, yeah.
So he takes a very comprehensive, like, scientific approach to things. Do you do something similar in terms of like nutrition and training and things like that? Like, do you look at the science of things, or do you just kind of go off of feel and how things are going that way?
I've lacked a lot, like, nutrition side, you know, especially as an amateur. I would drink soda, eat fast food, and show up and fight. That's why I was fighting at 55 a lot, but. So I've kind of dialed in a little bit more on nutrition. Still not perfect. The higher I go, the better I'm going to get at that. But I'm a big film watcher, big on that. You know, me and Colton are big on game planning. You know, I walk out there with a purpose every time. You know, I know, glad you put your head on when you shoot, what's your favorite punch to start with. You know, sometimes your favorite color, your girlfriend's name.
Yeah.
I know a lot of shit about you by the time we get in there. But
do you talk a lot of shit when you're fighting?
No, not really.
No,
not too much. Not okay. Too much. Yeah, I haven't dug into that
shit. Shit talking yet?
Well, I know there was some animosity between you. I can't remember which fight it was. It was the one for NFA.
Yeah, Brian.
Yeah, what happened there?
He was kind of just
because right after you submitted him, you did the whole.
It'll come out. It's there. I grew up watching WWE.
Yeah,
it'll come out. But I try to keep it contained for the most part. I try not to be an asshole no more. That guy, he was just, I think it was really just a conflict of characters. You know, I'm super quiet, super chill. He's loud, you know, he just brings a show. And he wasn't, the whole time he wasn't necessarily like super disrespectful until like right before and right after. Like he was like more of downplaying grappling. Like if we stood and fought, blah, blah, this would happen.
MMA, motherfucker.
If I found you in the street and I had you and I had an arm and there's no ref to pull me off.
Go to sleep.
Dead if I want you to.
Right.
Like, at the end of the day,
you're lucky if you just go to sleep.
Yeah.
You
know? There was like a 6 or 7 minute interaction with him backstage. I was trying to get to my interview and he stops in the hallway and he's just sitting there like, you know, talking, chirping, yelling, trying to, you know, get to me. I don't even know what all was said anymore, but he was arguing me for a minute and I was like, someone like, get him. Brad came in and like separated us, but I was like, someone get him because I'm about to be banned from Missouri for fighting this dude again. Yeah, it was crazy. Damn.
What's the most insane moment in like a fight you've had, you think? Like, has there ever been like a holy shit moment, or like is there like a moment that stands out to you?
Probably the TKO of my last amateur fight of Aaron.
That Ballinger right here.
Aaron Lake. That was probably,
Aaron Lake.
Yeah, Aaron Lake was probably the
20 seconds.
Yeah, just because backstage, like, we had a game plan. We were going to start at the legs, go to the body, and, you know, finally open his head because he's so tall. And he was super susceptible to leg kicks. And backstage, me and Austin were lined up in the hallway. They were calling out Aaron Lake, and we were bullshitting. We're always joking around backstage. You would literally never think I was about to go fight somebody by the way we act back here. We're so, like, chilled out. But he said, I said something about knocking him out with a left hook, and Austin goes, "Shut up, dude. You ain't got no power in your left hand. You'll never do that." 15 seconds in, I throw a left hook, and I see his head go this way and his legs go the other way. And I, like, that's the one where I stopped and I hit a salute mid-fight. And, like, that to me, like, it was like time froze. I was like, what? I just did that. You know? So yeah. That was like you don't get too many of those moments where you're able to, like, be there in the cage, you know, a lot of it just kind of flies by and you kind of just do. So I think being there and seeing that happen, especially right after Austin was talking all that shit.
Yeah.
That was a cool moment.
That's
sick,
dude. Yeah. I'm gonna have to look. I watched a lot of your fights. I don't think I saw that one. So I'm gonna have to look that one up after this. Man, that's crazy. What's your take on, like, the current state of MMA is, with the people that, you know, like, try to be super flashy that try to create animosity between people? Do you think that that's something that, like, I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but is that, do you think that's good for MMA? Do you think it's not? What's your take on that, you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's a bad thing for MMA, you know, it's so new and early. I don't think you can really do anything to it bad, you know, especially people being people. That's what you want. You want real. So even if the Colby Covingtons that are putting on a persona, you know, that's
way to do it. Yeah.
You know, it's their way to do it. If that's what they want to do, they can do it that way. See the downfall he's having now.
Yeah. It doesn't look so good. It doesn't look so bad. It doesn't look so good when you're losing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm cool with it all, you know, whatever anybody wants to do, you know, everyone's going to watch something. And watch him get beat up or watch him win, whichever one you're watching for.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I like it all.
Yeah, I think there's something to, you know, creating some drama just because it gets more people interested. You know, I'm way more like interested in watching a fight where the two guys are talking shit to each other than I am the guys that are like, you know, I just respect my opponent and I think we're both going to go out there and perform our best.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, I mean, I'm gonna watch the fight, but. Yeah. I'm way more excited to see the dudes who hate each other or appear to hate each other.
Sure.
You know,
the one guy that's talking the most shit and the guy that's just sitting there being quiet and see, like, oh, this motherfucker's got something brewing. I can just, you know, you can see it. So,
yeah, I was talking to Jamie and he's got a fighter that's fighting somebody that he doesn't like this time. And he was like, he's super excited because he's never fought someone that he doesn't like. And, like, that made me think, like, back on all my fights of who I fought and who, like the couple times that I fought, like, you know, the Jordan Kaufman, the Brian Stichiel, the guys that were, like, doing a little bit of online talking, you know, kind of disrespectful. I haven't had, like, a super crazy guy yet. The little bit of, like, okay, you know, I'm cool with actually hurting this. Because a lot of times I'm like, it's just a fight, blah, 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 be sportsmanship and respectful and stuff. I still love violence. So I still want to hurt people, but. Whenever you're doing a little bit of disrespect and you're talking a little shit, I'm a like hurting you. Enjoy that a little bit. So not only does it excite the fighter, but people watching it too.
Yeah.
Do you think that was that knack for violence? Is that something that you just kind of that was born into you, or is that something that just grew over time?
I've just been, like, bred into it, you know, growing around it. Like I said, I grew up watching WWE. My dad was a real, you know, American daddy. He was always, we were roughhousing. We were time. Violence was just in my household. Spike TV, WWE. Mm-hmm. I had a brother, you know, it was nothing. That was masculinity, you know, wrestling. Who was a better wrestler? You could hold me down. You could hurt me. That's where the respect came from. You know, a real old style kind of way to look at it. But that's the way I came up. So I think that really just helped me. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, we talk a lot about masculinity on this show. I mean, that's part of the manhood aspect of this. I mean, do you still feel that violence aspect is a good part, or is a form of masculinity, or is a good representation of masculinity?
I think it's the most primal, you know. You look back even the early ages, you're not going to get any more respect out of me than if you could hold me down and kill me. If there's nothing I can do to stop you from doing that, you got my respect. I'm going to be good. You know? I'm not going to do anything dumb around you. Yeah, I'm not doing anything stupid around you.
Yeah.
So I think the primal side of it, yeah, there's definitely a primal urge of, if I'm going to go fight this dude and I can write it down, do whatever I want to you, and you can't stop it. Okay. You know, who's the man? Who wouldn't? You know, if it was old times and we only had so much food.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not. You know, if we're in prison, I get the right bunk.
Yeah.
you're doing my laundry.
Yeah. Damn, man. Well,
there's an aspect to it. We're in a modern society, so that doesn't work in society, but that's why you fight.
So would you say that now having that aspect, but being able to control it, is more masculine than actually being able to do it?
Yeah, for sure.
That's where I'm at with
that,
it.
That superhero thing, with great power comes great responsibility.
Well, it seems like you've grown a lot from, you know, when you were younger. You know, like, you used to be way more crazy and willing to, you know, just fucking fight a guy in the street than you are right now, you know? And it's, I mean, it's part of growing up and part of, you know, just growing as a man.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's cool to see, like, that you're aware of that in yourself, you know?
Ray, like, now it's only, like, fight time or, like, close. Like, whenever you make that kind of, like, that switch into that mindset, you know, because you gotta go to a different place to be able to fight people in underwear.
Yeah.
But like 4 weeks out, Ray, you know, if I walked outside, someone wanted to fight me, no, I'm getting in my car, I'm going home, you know, I got a long ways to go. 2 weeks out, Ray, someone outside want to fight me, he's probably getting fought. Yeah. That's probably what's gonna happen.
That rage is building.
Yeah. It's a, you switch that mindset, you know, like DC said, he pushed a kid down when he made that switch. So you're different when you're fighting. It's a different, especially the closer you get, the closer I get, it's like being hungry, you know, you can almost eat.
Yeah.
Do you find it tough to switch it on and off, or like,
no,
at least come out of it once you're in it? Do you find it tougher to come out of it than it is to switch it on?
I don't think it depends on the fight. Sometimes, like, there's been, like, I went back and watched Austin Spengler fight the other day, and you can see me finish him, get up, I walk around the cage, my coach walks in, he tries to dab me up, I walk right past him, I got this, like, pissed off look in my face, make a whole circle, back in our, waiting on him to get up, waiting on the ref and everyone to come in, and then my brother comes in and he talks to me, I still got the same fucking look, and, like, 2 seconds go by, and I'm laughing and I'm smiling. Like, to me, like, I can remember the mindset. I can remember what I was thinking back, like, in that time. And you can see it right there. I switch, you know, I'm not chill. You know, I realize it's over. I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't want to fight no more. And then there's been times where I'll get all the way downstairs or we'll get all the way out to the club afterwards. And I'm still like, aren't you happy you won? Still pissed off and, like, you know, on edge, ready to just fucking kill something. 15-second fight. So glad I'm won.
Didn't get to show what I was working on.
So I kind of, it just depends on the experience. Sometimes you can pull yourself in and out of it real fast. I don't have a single problem going into it. You know, I think just being a piece of shit when I was little, you know, being an asshole. So I don't have any problem getting into it. That's an easy mindset for me to get into. Coming out of it, definitely a little tougher sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense. Well, you know, financial freedom, fighting, real estate, like, what's kind of your, like, end game? Do you think you're going to kind of invest more into real estate in the future? Or, like, what do you kind of see yourself doing after fighting?
Yeah, I think real estate is probably going to be my main goal and avenue, just because I feel like it's the one that works the best for you versus you having to work.
Yeah.
So
you're going to find two big proponents of real estate, right?
Yeah. That could be the aspect that gives you that freedom to train the way you want to train, especially if you can develop that a portfolio of rental properties that are giving you that income, that passive income. I guess you can't really call it passive because that's one of those things.
You've owned real estate. It's far from passive. Yeah. You know, that's one thing I always know whenever someone comes to me. It's like, yeah, I really want to get into real estate for the passive income. And I'm like, okay, you know, I've got a handful of rental properties. I'm a full-time real estate agent. Like, it's far from passive.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, there are ways to invest in real estate where it is passive, where you're in, that's more of kind of just being the bank.
Yeah. You know, the bank wins.
You know, the bank, that's the people who really win in a real estate transaction. Be the guy that has enough money to loan it out for people. And then you're essentially just sitting back waiting for your return. But, you know, what do you, what do you see yourself, you know, doing after fighting? You're going to get into real estate or?
Yeah, I don't plan on waiting until after, you know,
start.
I just sold a fourplex last year that I bought. I only owned it for like a year. but it was kind of the same situation. I had a goal in my head of what it was going to look like, and it was a little harder than what I wanted. And especially like just now turning pro and stuff, it was a bit much for me, you know, with a day job, being a professional fighter.
Yeah.
No, were you
a landlord of four people?
Were you flipping it, or would you turn it like buy it as a rental and hold?
Yeah, I bought it as a rental. Yeah. So I sold that just because it was like everything was going wrong with it. It was just getting out of hand. But I didn't really even take a crazy loss on it. You know, I kind of made what I had in it really. So I'm basically back to
learning experience. Right. You know, I'm sure you learned a lot from it. So it didn't completely come. It wasn't, you know, even if you lost a little bit, you gained some knowledge. And okay, well, next time when I'm looking at properties, I'm going to see, okay, I remember this from last time. I'm going to address that, or ooh, this is a red flag. I'm going to stay away from that. Or, you know, so you definitely are going to learn something from that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I've, like I said, I don't think I lost a lot on it. I've got money still from it, you know, saved up. So, it's definitely right when I get, you know, the credit bounce back obviously is a thing, you know, that I got to work on. So getting my credit back in the right spot, getting my professional fighting life into a spot where I'm ready to make that jump again. That's really it. You know, waiting till professionally I'm ready on this side of it, where this kind of takes a little lax, you know, maybe I'm not cranking out 5 or 6 in a year.
That's fucking crazy.
If I fight a few times in a year, then I told Colton like maybe the end of this year, early next year, I'm going to try to buy, and not a fourplex, I'm going to try to go a little smaller for the first one, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Well, if you need help on the credit side of things, let me know. We can talk off camera on that. That's kind of my area of expertise on the finance side of things.
Yeah, I was super good. Like when I first turned 18, I went and bought a Ford Raptor because I had an 800 credit score, you know? I just walked to the dealership and they're like, whatever you want, take the Raptor. So I went and did that. Had that, I owned that for a couple of years. That was super cool. And same thing, I sold that and then I built my credit. I had like a 750, 780 for me for $350,000 for a house. I was like, I'm going to get my grandma into a house and out of the trailer. She kind of talked me out of it. She's like, well, why do you want to make that kind of payment fighting and doing this? Do something else. Someone else make the payment. It's still difficult. Still not as easy as they make it seem, but I figured it out. So we'll be trying again soon.
Yeah.
You're at that age too, like house hacking. Have you thought about house hacking where you like can buy a multifamily house, like one, like a four family, live in one of the units and rent the other three out. That way you're getting in with minimum down, getting a better interest rate, all that stuff. And then living there for a year and then buying another one and building it up that way. But with using minimal.
Yeah, because you can put like 3.5% down.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, I'm sure when you bought the rental property, you probably put 20 or 25% down. I would imagine. So, you know, you can get into it for a lot less, and then you only have to live there for a year before you can do it again.
Yeah.
And that's a great strategy that a lot of people do to build up a portfolio really quickly.
Yep.
You know, and just buy one a year.
Only gotta be there for a year.
Yeah.
So it's,
or a very strong worded letter of explanation on why you're not living there for a year.
we can help you with that.
Sure.
Now, do you have a? I mean, you're so young, so you might not. But like, do you have an age or a time where you're like, okay, I'm gonna be done with fighting when I'm this age or anything like that? Have you ever thought that far into the future?
I hate like looking and watching these 40-year-old dudes still fighting, you know, just because that's all they got. I hate seeing that because I feel like if you have the career that you wanted, that shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. Like Yoel Romero should not still be fighting.
Yes. Tony Ferguson shouldn't
have
still
to. You guys shouldn't have to do that. And I don't know if it's because they have to or because they want to. Maybe they just still love it.
And it's like, because I mean, some guys, it's kind of their identity. Yeah. It's like, what else? What do I do now?
Yeah. You know? And I talk to a lot of guys like Billy the Kid and Marshall and stuff, and they talk about it being identity or not. You know, Billy's really pulled away from it being his identity. You know, he's a barber. He does all this stuff. He's got a lot of super connected in the Springfield area. And that was a big thing with me getting into real estate and stuff was when I first started, this is what, as a 19-year-old kid, I'm like, I'm a fighter. That's what it is, you know? Now that I'm, you know, 23, I'm like, I'm Ray. You know, I'm a mechanic. Yeah. And I'm really good at fighting. And when I'm done being really good at fighting, I want to be not working. You know? I don't want to get out of fighting and then go into working. So that's been something for sure.
Cool. Awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah, because you definitely want to have that. You want to have a, you know, everyone had like, you want to have a backup plan, but you don't want to have a backup plan at the same time because it can get in the way of what you're trying to do currently, but it's never, never a bad idea to at least have something.
I feel like the story of like the, oh, he came from nothing. He put all of his eggs in this basket and then he made it. It's almost played out. You've seen it with Connor. You've seen it with so many dudes and it works. It's a great, it's a great story. So well. Yeah. But I think it's played out. And by the time the dudes get to the highest high, like I said, they get what they wanted out of it and they're done.
Yeah.
Never the same once they get to that level. So I feel like if I have that before then, you know, I've got the financial ability to not fight, you know, and I'm, and you're standing across the dude from the cage that wants to be there, not because he has to be. He doesn't need this check. He's not Kevin Holland that wants to, that needs to fight five times a year so he can support his hunting, you know?
Yeah.
No, I've got, you know, six figures in the bank and I want to be right here across from you to kill you. That's what, this is what I want to do. No place I'd rather be on this Saturday, you know? That's the scary dude, I feel like. You know, guys that really want to be there. And to me, that's a, that's going to be a successful career, not a forever career. I don't, like I said, I won't be fighting 40. So hopefully before 40, I'm done with it. And hopefully
you're financially set.
Yeah. And hopefully before then I've got the financial side figured out to where I'm not fighting because I need fighting because I like hurting people. And you know, I want to make my parents proud of, you know, competing at a super high level globally.
Staying on that line of real estate and fighting. What do you find is harder to stay more consistent with, investing in real estate or fighting?
Investing in real estate.
Well, that makes me feel okay.
I can fight every Saturday if it's at 55, you know?
So
I fought 10 times as an amateur in a year. So,
dude,
that's easy to be consistent.
Holy shit.
Well, I guess when you're finishing guys in 20 seconds.
Yeah. I'll fight.
Yes. Three fights don't even make a round.
The second and the tenth. I don't care.
I mean, I have to go back and look, but like, as a pro record, have you ever made it past the second round?
Pro, no, I've not made it in the second as a pro. I guess I only went to the decision twice as an amateur and to the second once. So, but it was 11 fights, and I think I had like 8 fights of like actual time or something.
Damn, that's crazy. Have you, you know, you've been doing this for a while now. Have you come across any injuries that have like hindered you at all? I know you got a fight coming up, so if you don't want to speak on that, I understand.
Yeah. I popped my rib out once, 2 weeks before I fought Trey Martin, actually.
Oh, really?
Dude, that I wrote the note down. Yeah, I popped my rib out. So that was like a pretty bad one that lingered for a long time.
Those rib injuries take forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, it's such an annoying thing because it's like any way you move, you breathe, you laugh, sneeze. Oh, it was fuck.
That was, and then I partially tore my LCL right before I fought Mason Pillow. That was a little one that still like flares up and lingers a little bit. And then I messed my hand up, that middle knuckle. A cartilage deal. When I fought Buck Cannon at one of the fights that went to decision.
Yeah.
The cut man, Papa Bear, he asks my hands almost every time I'm there because that's the dude I walk up to. I feel like he's one of the best. But for whatever reason, that fight, he did like a super thin layer. I was like, in my head, I'm like, oh, that's fine. You know, more meat on these, you know, padding. That was the fight that went 3 rounds and we ended up punching each other like 100 times. So I'll get out, my hands all swelled up. It's been causing me problems ever since, but.
How long ago was that?
That was like my 5th amateur fight.
Oh, see. Fuck, dude.
So I've been fighting the whole time with it, so wow. it's not keeping me from it
at this point. Yeah. Used to it.
Yeah, June of 22. That's what it shows on here.
Yeah.
Damn. So it hasn't really messed up things too bad for you.
Yeah, no, there'll be like days where I got to take off, or if I hit someone, like, I can't, there's no way I'm going to get in a street fight with it. If I hit something hard without padding, oh, yeah, it'll mess me up, but as long as I wrap it or I got gloves on, I'm normally pretty good.
Yeah, dude, the bare knuckle shit, that's become like a, you know, pretty popular over the last few years. Yeah. Is that something you could see yourself ever doing?
Colton won't let me. I've tried talking him into it.
Really?
Just because I feel like it's like the UFC is super new.
Yeah.
That's even newer.
That's very new.
Like,
yeah.
And I watched some of the fights, like some of the guys' ability to actually box is out there. They're super tough and will take one to give two, you know? So I feel like if somebody like a good boxer that didn't care about being hit got into that, he could really take over that, because everyone, Like, everyone's watching clips of that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Even people that don't watch combat, they just watch someone getting, like, that dude that got knocked out in 3 seconds, the fastest knockout
yes.
ever.
Oh,
that Cole Farrell guy. He's like 10-2 in MMA, gets knocked out in 5 seconds and
jeez.
And bare knuckles.
So. And you realize, like, how much, I mean, just the how, like, people get cut with the bare knuckles.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think that's the reason Colton's saving me from it, because, like, that, you take two bad fights in that, you fuck up your hand or your face, and
yeah, and then you got the scar tissue.
You ain't
that
got an MMA career after that, you know.
Yeah, you're like Nate Diaz, where yeah. just the second he gets hit, his eyebrows open up, and
yeah.
It's like,
I think that's why guys wait till the end of their career. You see a lot of guys after the career go into it. I think if you go into it away, that's your career. Like, if I was to go and do that, not just I could probably go do a one hitter, you know, and just go in and out.
Yeah,
but if I was gonna go fight consecutively in that, then I would have to give up MMA, and that would be. I don't feel like you can transition back and forth, especially like those guys have, I don't know how many times they fight a year, but there's no way you get in a bare knuckle fight and your hands hold up to go fight 2 months later.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah. They're fighting two times a year if they're lucky.
Yeah. I feel like you break your hands every time. Every time you got to break something. Punching foreheads.
Yeah.
Oh man.
doesn't sound fun. No.
It don't, like, sometimes when I think about it, I'm like, hell no, absolutely not. And then I'll set on it some more, and I'll see like a card coming up or something, or they're looking for like this weight class, and I'll text Colton. I'll be like, hey,
they need a 45.
Look at this. Let's run down here and do this show quick. And he'd be like, no.
Now you got the slap. What's the slapping one?
Slap fighting.
Yeah, oh, man.
I would never do that.
No.
Good on that.
Yeah,
I'm good on
Jesus,
that.
Like,
good
you're just that. Standing there waiting to get fucking smacked in the face. Like,
dude, no.
There's a guy from Oakville that I went to high school with that's on it.
Really?
Yeah, TJ Matthew. Or really? TJ Thomas. Yeah. But actually, yeah, Pat Maroon's ex brother in law, I guess was. I don't know if they were ever married, but yeah. So the mother of Pat's oldest son's brother.
Wow.
Yeah, he's from Oakville.
Yeah. That's a whole different level of crazy, I think.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, sitting there waiting
just
for this dude to slap
literally
me.
Literally just with all their force.
Yeah, and you're just sitting there fucking waiting for
it's just
it.
Just like CTE.
So you can give them one.
Yeah. Dude, CTE waiting to happen.
I've not watched, I mean, I watch the clips more than I've never actually sat down and watched like a whole, I guess they call it a card.
Yeah.
I don't know. But like, I don't, I guess, just I feel like the advantage of going first is fucking huge,
yeah,
like, you know.
For sure.
You know, you're like, man, if I just fucking chalk my hands up real good and fucking crack this dude and he drops, I win.
Well,
you know,
can you bet? I wonder if you can bet on that.
Yeah,
probably.
I bet the odd switch after one slap is
100%. Yeah, you get wild.
I'll live bet them fuck out of that.
But yeah, can
my
you
minus 800 turn into a plus 1600
real quick. I'll take it. Dude. Yeah, because you're just sitting there fucking waiting for it. Yeah. Oh God, they. Thanks.
Yeah, boxing is something Colton's actually entertained, and we've actually like we've almost set up. I would transfer in box too, just because that's what I started, and I feel like prepping for an MMA fight and then going off and taking a quick boxing match, especially at my level. Like I'm
I feel like it'd be. I mean, I don't know. It would be a pretty easy. It would seem. I would imagine an easier camp. You know, or like probably easier on your body for sure.
Yeah, easier on my body for sure, and an easy one to like do, and then also just get back to.
Yeah, get right back to what you're doing.
Kind of like doing like a jiu-jitsu tournament in the middle of it. It's not like crazy. You know, going to take a lot of life at this stage. You know, if I was boxing really good guys, probably. I won't be doing that, but if I can get in there and fight a guy with a couple fights,
because you'd have to start as a pro, because you don't have any pro boxing fights, so you'd have to go right into pro since you're a pro.
I'm sure they would weigh in like my professional MMA on the, like they would let me fight more experienced guys. They wouldn't just give me to
no-name guy.
Yeah, for sure. I'm super open to it. Colton's actually, you know, played with that idea.
Yeah,
a great way to develop your striking too, you know.
You know, you see yourself like, you know, maybe after fighting, getting into more like jiu-jitsu, or would you do like jiu-jitsu tournaments?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because like a lot of the fundamentals of jiu-jitsu, we've kind of neglected, you know, coming up because I never just went to the straight jiu-jitsu class until I started really MMA, started going to them. But as far as like, you know, playing with the legs, passing guard, you know, all the technical stuff without punching that you learn from it. I've picked up on some stuff here and there, but having it down to where I, you know what to do and I could teach it, I don't have a lot of that. So I definitely want to grow it, learn it, and compete there just just to know, you know.
Yeah.
Well, there's something
if
too.
If it comes down to it and I can't punch you no more in a fight, I break my hand again or something. You know, and I got to hold you down. I got to win this way, you know.
Like, right.
Yeah, I want to be able to do it for sure.
Well, then it's something too after you're done with fighting that you could do for a long time. I mean, you see those guys in those tournaments that are
50, 60 years old, dude. Yeah, I mean, there's guys I train with at my gym. I mean, literally, the guy I was training with this morning, he's a purple belt at our gym. You know, I think he's like 47. I mean, and, you know, you look at this guy and you never think that he's fucking killer.
Yeah.
Well, fuck it.
He armbarred me today. Yeah. You know, like
Anthony Bourdain. What was he? He was almost
blue belt.
Yeah, he was like 60s.
Dude, it's cool that people, it's just something you can do for a long time. And, you know, if you do it smartly, you can do it for a long time.
Right.
But it's just all about how you train and who you train with. Yeah.
Well, back to talking about fighting here. You know, where do you see the biggest gaps between fighters who make it to the top and those that don't?
I think it's the fights they take, you know, because you see a lot of guys get all the way to like almost where I'm at, you know, either where I'm at or a little bit past me, but they've taken the easier route, the better fights, you know, the guys that really shouldn't have been fighting. And you get to the next stage, like probably where I'm at, you know, you go try to fight on LFA, they're not going to match you up good. Not going to do what, you know, hometown promotion would. Mm-hmm. So they either make the jump to like a regional scene like LFA or something like that and think they're going to get a few fights and go to the UFC, or they get signed, they get to the UFC and get a favorable fight there. I think that's the big thing, is the competition, dudes be fighting. You know, that was a thing me and Colton talked about, like him matching the last couple of guys. You know, it was no longer, like I said, Trey, skill gap, way too big. I can write down, do what I want to you. After that, it's like, okay, every fight, we got to take a step up in competition. Record's got to be better. He's got to be better at, you know, everything as a whole. So I feel like I've done real good at that. Like you can look at every fighter that I've had. Like, guy's more dangerous than that dude. That dude's more dangerous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every guy's more dangerous. Every guy's got more accolades. Every guy's a higher level. So I'm slowly building myself up to be able to compete at the highest level. I've been able to compete at the level that I'm at right now, three fights ago, but you got to test yourself accordingly. Step up.
Now, when it comes to getting these fights scheduled, I mean, is it the promoters of the leagues that you're fighting in, or is it like you reaching out to them? Like this next fight you have coming up, did you guys reach out to him, or did he reach out to you, or was it just the promoters of the organization that's running the fight that set it up?
FAC actually hit me and Colton up. I let Colton handle it all. They all go through Colton now. Mm-hmm. They message me, I'll just give them his name. Mm-hmm. Because I'll say yes, you know. I'll fight whoever. Colton shut that shit down. But fighters fight. It's definitely good to have somebody looking out for you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, FAC, they hit us up like 2-3 weeks before I fought David and was like, hey, after you get done with David, do you want to come defend FAC title? Yeah.
And that fight against David, that was the one where you won the belt?
That was the last fight at Synergy. Duran.
Oh, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing.
About three before, I think, I fought Duran. I won the FSC title.
Yep.
Came back and I lost to Alex, and then I beat David. And right between David and Alex, they booked
Jose.
Up at FAC first, yeah.
Do you find one of those promotions better than the other?
They all have their own perks to me. I don't think any of them are better than the other. I think FAC is the biggest recognized one. Like they've sent the most dudes to the UFC. They've got the biggest promotion, the biggest cage, you know, the more eyes on it. But if I know when I go to Synergy, the connection I have with Chris and Zach, the way they treat me, I'm at hometown, you know, I'm fighting right there in Springfield. You know, that's all those pluses that I get. If I fight up here at Nemesis, they give you a buffet for, you know, weigh-ins, Marlene and
Brad,
nicest people ever.
Yeah. We need to get Brad on.
And then you go to Knuckled Up. He's got not the best promotion side. Like, I don't have any videos of any of the fights that I've had for him.
Yeah.
But Ricky Davidson.
I couldn't find the Ira one. I was like, I saw flying knee. I was like, man, I want to see that one.
I've been asking for it. I'm like, one of your cameras guys got to have it. You know, the live, like, cut off when I try to rewatch it. So I've been trying to get it. But like I said, he's taking care. Even when I go down there and train, he, like, forces me gas money. One of the best dudes in the game for sure, way better than a lot of these promoters, you know, that I talk to. So everyone's got their plus side, you know? And to me, I said it to someone else, but these guys take care of you better than like LFA, and K cage warriors. Because a lot of guys, they don't mess around with local shows. They go and they fight for Fury, they fight for LFA, and they just jump right into that. Those guys don't care if you make it to the UFC or not. You know, people are going to make it to the UFC. Fighters are going to go. Fighters are going to win. They're going to send people. LFA is good at that. Fury's good at that. They're going to keep doing it. They don't care like Chris Gregory, like Marlene does. Those people care. They want to see Ray Hayes. They want to see everyone that they put on make it to the next level. I feel like that's the biggest thing, you know, the relationship, the way they take care of you around here, which is I fly across the country and fight. God knows.
Yeah.
I was always curious if it's like baseball. So like baseball's my background and all that stuff. So I was always curious, like, are these different promotions, like, are there different levels, like A, double A, and triple A, like there is in baseball? And
there kind of is. Like Chris, he puts on, you'd almost watch his cards and be like, I don't know who's going to win. Chris Gregory
with
Synergy.
Okay. Yeah, got it. Yeah. Sorry.
He works with Zach Cummings out there. You look at his cards and it's like, puts on super competitive fights almost every time. You look at some of the other cards around here, like Shamrock. Some of those fights I watch, I'm like, dude's going to win. I know that, you know, I know which side's going to win, which side's going to lose. And I've been on, you know, on those cards like that. You know, like I said, when I fought Trey Martin, that was one of the ones that was like, if fucking Trey wins, it's something crazy happened.
Right. Yeah.
But LFA, they don't do that. Like you watch LFA, everyone's getting you're going to have to fight whoever they give you. Mm-hmm. It's a UFC stepping stone for a reason. They put the most people into the UFC because they put on best versus the best, and that's the only way to get there, you know, versus I can fight in Springfield and Chris will look out for me.
Yeah.
Chris is one of the better ones to not do that once you get to a certain level, you know. He'll still try to give you options, but
is the goal is trying for now to as a stepping stone to the UFC to get to LFA? Or are you trying to go straight?
I've had LFA, Cage Warriors, ONE FC. I've had everyone hit me up and offer me fights and stuff, and like I said, I leave it to Colton. You know, if they were hitting me up and asking me, I would have been fighting everywhere. So Colton definitely, he shifts through all that and works with the money and who I'm fighting, what that stuff. But I think it's necessary almost to an extent to fight on those shows. Like those are the ones that the UFC is watching, you know, like Juice just got signed from Synergy, Julius Walker. Mm-hmm. So I
saw that. Yeah.
They've watched a little bit of, you know, Synergy. You know, you got Dakota fighting a Nemesis. And I know the UFC is watching Dakota. You know, there's no way no one's watching them. Shamrock, you got, you know, Dustin Lampros, who was on The Ultimate Fighter.
Ultimate Fighter, yeah.
You know, somebody's watching that show. Yeah, somebody's got to be watching it. So they're watching them, but not like LFA. You know, LFA, I'm sure that's on. And
yeah, I would say LFA is like definitely like the AAA of MMA for if you're going to use that comparison.
Yeah, well, in a lot of these are all regional based stuff. I mean, like, are there other? I mean, I'm still new to all of this. Are there other regional regions that have like this many levels of MMA fighting promotions? Or is St. Louis? Or is the Missouri region and all that pretty? Yeah, Midwest as a whole.
Yeah, I think like LFA and like Fury, they go all the country. Yeah. So and then the ones like Synergy and Shamrock, those are like I wouldn't even like some of them are almost they're not even really regional. They're more local just because they don't go out of this area. You know, the guys that go to California and stuff, those are what you would consider regional. So those are like your local shows in every state.
Yeah, stuff.
I'm sure there's states that don't. Yeah. Do that. You know, there's probably states that don't have MMA, but within the surrounding area, there's local shows you can go to. You know, you got shows in Arkansas. I've been Iowa shows have hit me up. So, I mean, you got your local shows, but if you want to go and you want to fight in the thousands and on Fight Pass, you got to hit up a regional show.
Gotcha.
Makes sense. Well, you know, Ray, like if, you know, 10 years looking back from now, what would you have to say, like, for you to be like, man, you know, I did it right? What would have to happen?
Just getting myself to that financial spot where I'm able to, like, if I got to do this whole thing and I still got to work a job all the way up until I make it somewhere in the UFC, then I fucked my life up outside of, you know, fighting. I want to be able to steer my financial self correctly to where I can exit out of fighting. Like if I wasn't a fighter, I would want to be able to financially get myself out of work, like real estate with whatever. If I wasn't even fighting, I don't want to work till I'm retired. You know, I don't want to do the retirement. I want to get out of the 9-to-5. So, figuring out my financial side and becoming where I don't got to work. And then, just getting to where I'm fighting at the highest level I can, whether that be not in the UFC. Maybe I can't make it. Maybe I get shut down and I get beat up. Maybe I'm just a, you know, beginner entry, not even ranked, or maybe I get ranked and I can fight, you know, ranked UFC competition, whatever that is, wherever the top, the capstone is for me. If I can make it there, it's to me, knowing that I made it there, you know, versus the what if. I don't want, there ain't gonna be a what if. It's gonna be I did that. Yeah, okay. Whether it be I missed, I yeah. suck, or I did that and I made it, you know, whatever way it is.
Awesome, man.
Well, and what's a belief or mindset you've adopted recently that completely changed how you approach life and training?
I don't think I've adopted it recently, but we've, like I said, we've been a finisher this whole time. Like, I've never trained to just beat you on points or play the system. So, and I think I've applied it to life too. Like, I'm not at my job to show up and go to leave the day. You know, I'm there to get the work done, to do what needs to be done and perform. I show up to the cage and I'm not there to make it from bell one to bell three. I'm there to die or kill you. You know? So I think the whole, you're here for a good time, not a long time,
right.
You know, so trying to make my worth out of everything, relationships, whatever, you know, I'm not here to just be your friend. Don't be best friends. You know, we're going to figure stuff out. So I think it's kind of translated a lot every, you know, digging more into the relationships I have with people, fighting again, training. When I show up and train, I'm not just trying to make it to the end of the round or trying to make it through the set. Oh, I'm pushing. I'm, you know, trying to have that set. Like, you can, when you have a coach in your ear yelling at you to one more set, do this faster, harder, blah, blah, blah. Then you can do it. But the guys that can do that on their own and they can push themselves with no coach yelling at them, that's a different kind of, not a lot of people have that. So instilling that in myself, you know, when no one's around, I'm at home doing my own workout or something, having the push to push yourself, get a little harder. You know, you go for a run and you're coasting and you're not breathing heavy, knock out three or four sprints, you know, make it hard. You know, a lot of guys can, especially in training, you see it a lot. Guys can coast, you know. You get to a certain high level, you go with guys that aren't on your level, you can coast. I try to break myself from that. If I'm sparring with a guy that's a lower level, I'll do something I'm bad at. I'll do something he's real good at. I'm going to beat you with this because I suck at it, you know. Right. So make myself super uncomfortable and just try to get the most out of every situation, every minute in life.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you see that a lot in jiu-jitsu with people that'll, you know, guys that'll, you know, avoid the hard rounds, you know, they're like, oh, I'd rather go roll with the white belt because I can play with what I can do what I want. But it's like, okay, if you are going to roll with that white belt, like, work on something you suck at, you know, like, okay, I'm working on this new guard or whatever. I'm trying to hit this submission or whatever it is. You know, I'm like trying to work this sweep from this guard or whatever it is. And, you know, you can even take, you know, lower level competition and work on getting better. It just doesn't always have to be, you know, going with the hard guys. But I mean, I think that is part of, you know, getting better is putting yourself in the deep waters and seeing if you can swim.
Absolutely, yeah. Like last night was my hardest sparring day in Springfield, and I did a round with Marshall Kemp. He's like 7-1, bro. See, whatever. He's one of those dudes that beat the fuck out of me whenever he wants. But we was in the midst of a round, and I'm like slacking off, trying to coast, trying to do my skate by, you know, like I'm taking up space, doing a lot of movement, kind of picking and poking, and he just wouldn't let me have it, you know, eating up the space, walking me down.
It's in your grill.
Yeah. Right in my face. And that's a mindset switch you got to have. Either A, I'm going to coast and I'm going to run and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to, you know, survive this round and wait till this timer goes off and go find somebody a little bit easier next time. Or I'm going to sit here, I'm going to bite down and me and Marshall are going to get to work right here and I'm going to give him what he needs. You know, he needs a round. So being able to do that every round, you know, because there's some rounds where I really don't want to. I really just want to skate. I really want to, you know, I catch myself doing it. I'll catch myself skating. Or right after, I'll catch myself walk across and get an easier round. It's like, no, you can't be doing that. If I want to make it to where I make it, hard round after hard round, fight down and fight through every moment.
Dude, sure. I mean, that's human nature. You know, we're always going to kind of seek the easiest path, but it's like the fact that you're catching yourself and be like, hey, no, motherfucker, I'm not coasting. Yeah. I'll fucking pick it up. Let's go.
Billy's one of the best in that room at doing that. He sees you with your hands on your hips, you know, you bending over, you sitting down, he's in your face yelling at you. You know, he's like the team leader. You know, he sees you sitting down over in the corner. Hey, get up.
Get up.
You ain't tired. you got to run with me next because you're tired.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you don't even get to put your hands on your hips in that room.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. What's strength? Do you do any sort of strength and conditioning or anything like that?
I've actually ignored that part for the longest time. I did one camp. I did do a whole like strength and conditioning regimen, and then I bounced out and quit doing it. Colton's put us through a little bit, but as far as like a set day, set time, set workout, I don't do it. And I think, I really think I should, obviously, you know, everyone's doing it in the UFC.
Yeah.
You got to be able to do it to keep up. But a big fear was like the size for 45. I'm super lean as it is. Yeah. I don't have a shit ton of muscle. And if I pack on any more, I feel like 45 is going to be a thing of the past. And 55 to me is the hardest weight class there
it
is.
It is. Yeah. It is.
So
mean,
that's
UFC,
a real hard path to go.
Right. Yeah. I mean, those guys are big. I mean, I know a lot of the guys that I know that'll fight at 55. I mean, they're walking around 190, you know, and they're big boys.
If there was a 65 weight class and like the bigger ones went away, then yeah, I'd fight at 55. Or like I told Colton, I was like, we can fight at 55 if it's the right dude. But I fought a few guys like the James Buchanan and the Jordan Kaufman where I get in there and I'm like, he's like 200 pounds. Like,
After he rehydrates.
Yeah, yeah. Like I ain't got no business fighting you.
Yeah.
I don't. So, the smaller 55ers,
There's no guarantee they're all going to be small.
There ain't, we got to scope them out. Step on the scale right now. What do you weigh?
Yeah.
You above, sure. You above 85? Then no.
No, thank you.
Well, the name, Sweet Baby. I know, obviously, you got the barbecue sauce.
It's great.
How'd you come up with the name Sweet Baby Ray's Hayes?
I think it was like right before my second fight. I was training with a jiu-jitsu guy. Like, we brought a jiu-jitsu guy in because I was facing a grappler. And I, like, hit some trip or throw on him. Got into like side control, hit him a few times, and the round came up, and he's like, he's laying on his back, and he doesn't do MMA. He's like, man, why'd you have to hit me with all that sauce? And Colton from like across the room snapped his head over, and we locked eyes, and I was like, what? Do you mean that Sweet Gray sauce? I was like, oh shit. From then on, it stuck.
Dude, it's a perfect name. Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's like fun and it's like, you know, it's unique.
It works out perfect too.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, like how many, you feel like you hear a lot of the same, like, you know, names like the Pitbull, the Viper, like there's like so many like stupid ones out there, quite frankly, but like yours is unique and like fun, which I think is cool.
And like getting into it, I was like, especially from WWE, I'm like, I don't name, bro. I'm not the Dead Man or the Legend Killer, dude. That's not me. But when they say it's, they're given, not by yourself. You got to wait on them given, for sure. You can definitely tell when someone's given themselves the nickname.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you made that one up on your own.
Yeah, you wanted that one, didn't you?
Yeah. I had to pick that too. If I had a choice.
Well, having a little fun with Sweet Baby Ray's, do you have a favorite barbecue sauce from Sweet Baby Ray's?
I'd be staying away from the sauces right now. It's been a while since I've ate good. But I don't really have a favorite from them. Hopefully one day I get me a commercial deal or something.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, that'd be sweet. Yeah. Sponsorship.
Yeah. Got it tattooed on the leg. So,
oh, you do?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that honey chipotle though is. It's good.
Speaking of food, you know, after a fight, is there something that you like, oh man, I've fucking just dieted for the last 8 weeks. I'm ready to fucking eat. What's the go-to?
I don't have a go-to. I literally eat thing and everything. Like, bad person when it comes to. I'll tell you something disgusting.
Perfect.
It was after I fought Alex Coover. Broke my nose. I'm all busted up. You know, the week after I take a few days off work, I'm laid up on the couch. This was the Monday after the fight. Turn on a show. I'm watching Netflix. I went and bought a family size thing of Ding Dongs, Nutty Bars, 24 pack of Pepsi.
And just crushed all of it.
Ate all the food and drank half the soda in one sitting.
Oh, bro.
Disgusting.
Diabetes, here I come.
6 o'clock rolled around. I went to training, like a knot in my stomach. And I think I'm going to just watch and slow roll today.
Oh, man.
Disgusting, dude.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it'll be like after fights, I'll have to like catch myself almost. And I'm like, dude, you're nasty. I don't even like this person, bro.
Dude, I feel like fighting, you know, I mean, I saw it with wrestling growing up because I wrestled in high school. It's just like, dude, you get like an eating disorder.
Yeah.
You know, like you really do. Cause like I always do that. Like even after I like do a, like I don't even really cut weight anymore. But like, it's like my mindset, like after a competition, is like, oh, I get to eat whatever the fuck I want for like 2 days, you know? Like, and I just fucking eat. And it's like, I shouldn't do that. I didn't like even cut weight that, or I mean, maybe I cut a couple pounds or something, but it's nothing like what you're doing.
No, and it's just a typical Saturday for me. Yeah. What you guys are talking about.
The girl I'm with, I started talking to her right before I fought David.
Yeah.
And like, I took her out once and I was like, I really can't be going out to eat. Oh, this is probably going to be a one hitter until after my fight. And I was like, I kind of got an eating disorder, so I'm going to be good on this one. I got like a salad or something light, you know, I'm like, this is weird going out to eat, eating a salad.
Just getting a salad.
Yeah. And she's like, what do you mean eating disorder? I took her out to eat after I fought David. 32-ounce porterhouse, appetizer, all the sides.
Different Ray.
Dessert. I was like, you said you're not judging. So you just close your eyes.
You got training Ray, and then you got the not training Ray. Yeah.
Yeah. I realized there was a problem because I went over to her house, and I had this thing of sugar cookies, like the ones you get from Walmart.
Yeah, like the big, thick icing on the top.
What, there's like four and four or something. And I sat down, and I'm eating them. I eat like four of them. Half thing's gone. And she looks over and she goes, are you going to eat like all those? And I seem like the disgust. And I go, no.
Yeah, no way.
No,
yeah.
What? That's all I wanted.
Yeah, I just wanted half of that.
Didn't even realize it.
Save the half for tomorrow.
I grabbed that from Walmart and a half gallon of chocolate milk. And I was like, I'm going to go to her house and eat all this.
Yeah.
She stopped me midway. I was like, nope, I ain't doing that. Yeah. I'm not going to do that.
Oh, man. That's great. Well, Ray, this has been awesome having you in here, man. It's been a lot of fun. Is there anything you want to promote? Obviously, you got the fight coming up before we get you out of here.
No, just the fight, May 2nd, Kansas City, Cable Dome Arena.
Sweet.
Very cool.
Now they do a pay-per-view for that?
Yeah, Spectation Sports does a pay-per-view. And when I fought David, they did their own sports book. Mm. I didn't notice it till after the fight, but I had odds. And like you could have clicked and betted on me. I'm like, Don't let me catch it this time. I'm going to put the house on me. Yeah, before I make it to the UFC, if I can bet on myself, absolutely.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, because you can't once you get in the UFC. That's right. Yeah. That's a bummer, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll suck. Yeah, and I can't bet on UFC anymore.
Yeah, fuck.
I'm going to have to go to rehab. When
Especially now that it's legal in Missouri.
Yeah. What
the Dana, fuck? You're going to have to pay for my rehab when you sign me.
Having withdrawals. Yeah, like,
change the rules back or something. Dude. Yeah. Betting on basketball.
Yeah. Shit I know nothing about. Yeah.
I don't even know these guys.
I want the red team.
I use a app called Bovada.
Yeah.
And it's got a like live table tennis that you can bet on. This is when I knew I had a little bit of a problem. The odds on table tennis after one score, like the live odds, like I said, with slap fighting, they switch like so big.
Really?
Oh, so man. Big. Wow. Yeah. I'll be laid up like 2 o'clock in the morning, $2 on a plus 1700 table tennis. Stupid.
That's awesome.
Scratching the itch.
Yeah. Gotta get that little rush.
Well, we like to end our show with one last question that's not on the questionnaire. Call play a little game called the Tombstone Game. Okay. Here lies Ray. What's it say on your tombstone?
Damn, my tombstone.
Mm-hmm.
Date I was born, date I died. I say some. I don't know. Thought about that. That's going to be one to think about for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of, it's like all about that legacy. What kind of legacy you want to
legacy
when you leave?
Let's go with, maybe I wasn't good. I did it.
That's perfect, man.
Perfect, man.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's awesome.
Well, thanks again for coming in, man. We had a blast. This is a great episode. So thanks to everybody at home who watched and listened. Please click that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. That would help us out a ton. Also, click that like button if you can. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.